Ato thus vihaya, giving up, imam, this, amum, and the next, cha, also, lokam, planets, vimashito, all of them being judged. Heyataya, because of inferiority. Purastat, herein before. Krishna Anguri, the lotus feet of the Lord. Sri Krishna. Sevam, transcendental loving service. Adimanyamana, one who thinks of the greatest of all achievements. Upavishat, sat down firmly. Sat down firmly. Prayam, for fasting. Amartya, Najam, on the bank of the transcendental river. The Ganges or the Jamuna. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Parikshit sat down firmly on the banks of the Ganges to concentrate his mind in Krishna consciousness, rejecting all other practices of self-realization. Because transcendental loving service to Krishna is the greatest achievement, superseding all other methods. Translation responsibly. Maharaj Parikshit sat down firmly. On the banks of the Ganges. To concentrate his mind in Krishna consciousness. Rejecting all other practices of self-realization. Because transcendental loving service to Krishna is the greatest achievement. Superseding all other methods. Purport. For a devotee like Maharaj Parikshit, none of the material planets, even the topmost Brahmaloka, is as desirable as Goloka Vrindavan, the abode of Lord Sri Krishna, the primeval Lord and original personality of Godhead. This earth is one of the innumerable material planets within the universe, and there are innumerable universes also within the compass of the Mahatattva. The devotees are told by the Lord and his representatives, the spiritual masters or acharyas, that not one of the planets within all the innumerable universes is suitable for the residential purposes of a devotee. The devotee always desires to go back home, back to Godhead, just to become one of the associates of the Lord in the capacity of a servitor, friend, parent, or conjugal lover of the Lord. Either in one of the innumerable Vaikuntha planets or in Goloka Vrindavan, the planet of Lord Sri Krishna. All of these planets are eternally situated in the spiritual sky, the Parabrahma, which is on the other side of the causal ocean within the Mahatattva. Maharaj Parikshit was already aware of all of this information due to his accumulated piety and birth in a high family of devotees, Vaishnavas, and thus he was not at all interested in the material planets. Modern scientists are very eager to reach the moon by material arrangements, but they cannot conceive of the highest planet of this universe. But a devotee like Maharaj Parikshit does not care a fig for the moon or for that matter, any of the material planets. So when he was assured of his death on a fixed date, he became more determined in the transcendental loving service of Lord Krishna by complete fasting on the bank of the transcendental river Jamuna, which flows down by the capital of Hastinapur in the Delhi state. Both the Ganges and the Jamuna are Arunacha, transcendental rivers, and the Jamuna is still more sanctified for the following reasons. Amagyana Chivanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshunyunitam Yamo Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Swapadantikam Vansha Kalpa Jarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Petitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Ram Hare Hare. So this is the final chapter in the first canto. So we see the pastime of Parikshit Maharaj about to leave this world. So this is a significant pastime for all of us. Why is it significant?
Because we won't have to leave.
What's that?
Because we won't have to leave.
Yeah, all of us have to leave. Right? All of us have to die. So we need examples of how to die perfectly, how to die a good death, how to leave this world properly. Because everything we're doing while we're living in this material world, while the material body is alive, is simply a preparation for the time of death, preparation for the final examination. So just like when you are in school, then you work hard to get a good mark on your exams. You want to get an A or an A plus. Prabhupada says if you try to get an A or an A plus, then okay, you might get a B. You know, but if you don't try hard, if you're only aiming for a B or a C, then you might get an F. And that means you have to come back to the material world again. So everything we're doing is simply preparing us for one thing, for the time of death. That is the test. That is the final test. And it's not an easy situation to face when the material body begins to deteriorate. It's a great test for the devotee's consciousness. Just like Mother Gandharvika, she's about to leave this world within a week or two, we expect. Could even leave today, possibly, like that. So she's prepared. I went to see her 2 weeks ago, and she's, you know, incredibly prepared in her consciousness to face the final examination, to face the final test. She's fixed on her goal. She's detached herself from the material body and is now desiring to serve Krishna eternally. So that is the test. All of us have to come to this test. All of us have to pass this test. So we see the same thing as here. Maharaj Parikshit, he is facing this final test and he is showing us how to leave this world. So what does he do? He has a death notice. Most of us don't have a death notice. Most of us don't know when we're going to die. Hands up if you know when you're going to die. Right? No one knows. Sometimes you get a notice. Okay, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, 2 weeks ago, 3 days ago. Sometimes you get a notice, like Parikshit Maharaj, 7 days ago. So, most of us don't have the notice. So that means we have to be prepared. We have to prepare our consciousness continuously. We have to be in a good state of consciousness. It's hard to stay in perfect Krishna consciousness all the time. It's hard for us to stay in perfect Krishna consciousness any of the time. In fact, we're never really perfectly Krishna conscious. We haven't achieved that state yet. But at least we should be practicing Ananya Bhakti as much as possible. As Krishna is teaching in the Bhagavad Gita, Ananya Bhakti means unbroken devotional service. We should, as Prabhupada says in the Gita, mold your life in such a way that you cannot help but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, as much as possible. Even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that It's not actually possible, especially in the material world, for most of us to think of Krishna 24 hours a day. Because you have to sleep, you have to evacuate, you have to do different activities, and you may not be thinking of Krishna perfectly during those times. But you are still considered to be performing ananya bhakti, or unbroken devotional service, if in the times that you are conscious, that you are connecting your consciousness to Krishna. You are focused on Krishna. Krishna or Krishna's service all the time. So then that is considered pure devotional service. That is considered ananya bhakti, or unbroken devotional service. Even though you went to sleep, and when you were asleep you weren't conscious of Krishna. Or you went to the toilet, you went to the bathroom, you weren't conscious of Krishna at that time. But the rest of the time, you should make it, mold your life so that you're always connected to Krishna, thinking of Him, right, and connected to Him. Always, everything must be connected to Krishna, not to Maya. Maya means that which is not. Prabhupada said that when we preach Krishna consciousness, what was the example he gave? He said, we come in like a needle and out like a plow. It means the devotees, if they just see one small opening or opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness, they will take it, they'll go in there. And then they'll come out the other side, and a great effect has taken place. But Prabhupada says that when you join the Sankirtan movement, when you join the Hare Krishna movement, when you join ISKCON, you are declaring war on Maya. Which means Maya does the same thing. Now, she just needs a little pinprick. She's looking all day. She's just watching you all day. And when she sees a little pinprick, she comes in, just like a needle, and then out like a plow. Now, that's how Maya works. In the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, we have the story of Paranjana. So Paranjana is allegorical. We hear about the city with nine gates. So the nine-gated city, our two eyes, our two nostrils, our ears, our mouth, our genitals, and our rectum. Right? So these are our nine openings of the body. So Maya, it said, this is like a fortress. Our body is like a fortress with nine gates, or nine openings. So the enemy sieges the fort. You see, in ancient warfare, they try to capture the fort. So the army would surround the fort. So this is Maya, right? She's got us surrounded 24/7, right? All day, all night. She's around us. And she's just waiting to get into one of those entrances. Right? I'll come in through your eyes. I'll show you something which will make you forget Krishna. Or I'll give you something to taste which will make you forget Krishna. Or you'll hear something which will make you forget Krishna. So that is her duty. That is her job, to distract us. Actually, she is a devotee. Maya, Maha Maya, in her original form, she is known as Yoga Maya, is described in Navadvip Dharma Mahatmya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says that one time, Durga, Maya, she comes to Krishna and she says, I don't like my service. Right? Sometimes devotees, they do this. They come and they say, I don't like my service. Right? I don't like... why is everyone so spaced out? Prabhupada doesn't even... Swarup's the only one who notices. Right? Everyone should be conscientious of these things. Start the class and Prabhupada hasn't even been prepared properly. Right? Don't think it's someone else's service. Right? Everyone in this temple has responsibility. Me included. It's my defect that I did not see it. Right? All of you should be more attentive in your service. So, one time Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Maya, she comes to the Lord and she says, I don't like my service. Because my service is to keep everyone away from you in the material world. Right? Her service is to distract all of us so that we forget Krishna. And the Lord said, don't worry, because in your original form, in the spiritual world, as Yoga Maya, your service is to bring everyone to me. To bring everyone towards Krishna. But in the material world, her duty or her service is to keep everyone away from Krishna. So she's constantly got us surrounded. Like that. So Prabhupada says that we should mold our life so that 24 hours a day we can't help but think of Krishna. We should always, so you have to mold your life. So either directly you are hearing and chanting about Krishna, or every activity you do is somehow connected to Krishna. That should be the attitude of a devotee. 24 hours a day, everything should be connected to Krishna, right? Then you can remember Krishna constantly. So the most important way for us to remember Krishna is by Shravanam Kirtanam. So it means when you're chanting, you should be remembering Krishna. What do you think of when you chant? I'm asking everyone.
Oh, I think of music. I usually chant music.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what do we think of while we're chanting?
The holy name.
The holy name. Yeah. Well, that's advanced chanting. That means we're chanting properly. If we're thinking of the holy name or meditating on the holy name. But analyze, when you chant your japa, what are you thinking of?
What's happening in your life?
Yeah, what's happening in your life? Right? The very significant things that are happening in your life, which Lord Brahma is extremely interested in. Right? You know this one story, one king went to see Lord Brahma, he came from earth. So he went to see Lord Brahma in Brahmaloka. So he got to Brahmaloka and the servants of Lord Brahma, he said, I've come to have darshan with Lord Brahma. I said, just wait 5 or 6 minutes. He's just watching one dance performance at the moment. The Gandharvas, the Apsaras, they're performing some Krishna conscious dance and singing for the pleasure of Lord Brahma. 5 or 6 minutes, he'll be ready and then... Okay. So then, finally, Lord Brahma had audience with the king, and the king came to Lord Brahma, and then Lord Brahma said, yes, how can I serve you? And the king, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something, he wanted his daughter to get married or something like that. Something like that. Was that it? His daughter? Yeah. Who was it? King Revata or something? What's that? Yeah, I can't remember exactly who the... Yeah, so there's one king, he's gone there and he asked for something. But it's something like, can you get my daughter married or something like that? So Lord Brahma just smiled at him. He said, don't you understand what's happened? He said, you left Earth. You've only been here for 5 or 6 minutes. Right? All the kalpas have passed. Right? All the yugas have passed. Right? We have a different manu now. Like that. He said, your family's gone. And you're coming up here to ask me for a donation. Everything's, it's gone. There's nothing there now. Right? So this is what we do. We chant our japa, and we're so absorbed. Oh, my life. You know, I've got this, all these problems, and this is my life, and so important, and everything. Like that, it passes in the flash of an eye. Everything just disappears very quickly. You know, and that's a reality. Just like Mother Gandharvika, she was a famous, somewhat famous singer, pop star. She was Queen of Rock in Australia, I think in 1966. So she was like some, a little bit famous. So 3 or 4 months back, one of the devotees was telling me the other day, they were speaking to her, and she said, yes, they've organized some gigs for me, some concerts, some performances. So she was going to tour a little bit and perform. But then suddenly, she finds out, you will die now in 3 months, like that. So then all those things that disappear, they're insignificant. So we have to understand all the things that go on inside our mind while we're chanting our japa, all these insignificant things, they all disappear very quickly. So when you're chanting your japa, you should be focused on Krishna, because Krishna is eternal. Our relationship with Krishna is eternal. That is reality. What's going on in this world? The Bhagavad Gita says this world is a dream. It's not a reality. It's a dream. So, how do we remember Krishna? Through hearing and through chanting. Right? And that's what Mother Jagatarini and Burujan Prabhu were teaching us on the weekend in the retreat. We have to hear about Krishna. They were speaking a lot of the time about Krishna's pastimes. Why? Because we have to learn to think about Krishna. Then when you chant, Krishna will come into your consciousness. Right? It takes time. You know, we have to gradually do like that. But we have to hear about Krishna. And Sachinandan Swami, he runs these japa retreats and these retreats. I've done maybe 10 years of retreats with Sachinandan Swami in Burajampur and Mother Jagatarini. And Sachinandan Swami always emphasizes this point. We have to develop sambandha with Krishna. Sambandha means relationship. You have to have a relationship with Krishna. Yeah. How can you have a relationship with someone if you don't know anything about them? You can't have a relationship. Right? But as soon as you learn about them, then a relationship evolves. Like you get to know someone, right? You've known them for, you know, several months. And then they say one day, I've got something to tell you. Right? Actually, my father's a millionaire. Like that. And you're like, really? Yeah. He owns, you know, so much. He's like multimillionaire. And then suddenly the relationship just goes, yeah, you understand so many things. He said, yeah, we can do so many things now. So this is what it is like when we develop our relationship with Krishna. The more you learn about Krishna, right, then the more you become amazed by his personality. And then you think, oh, you're like that. We can do these things. I can be a part of your service. I can serve you in your pastimes. We can. So Krishna is revealing all of these things to us through the Srimad Bhagavatam, because Krishna wants us to come back to him. So this is called Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting about Krishna. So if we absorb our time in hearing and chanting about Krishna, then when we do all of our other activities, which we have to do during the day, the responsibilities to maintain and expand the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, then all becomes connected to Krishna. This is the way that we have to think. This is for Krishna. This is Krishna's seva. So all of our life, 24 hours a day, as much as we can, it all has to be connected to Krishna, either directly hearing or chanting or directly serving him. So, Maharaj Parikshit, he only has 7 days to live, so what does he do? Right. Absorbs himself now in Krishna, nothing else. Right. Renounces his kingdom. Why does he renounce the kingdom? Why does he detach himself from the kingdom? So he can concentrate on Krishna. Because he's going to be detached from the kingdom by death. So an intelligent person, he renounces before the time of death. Don't wait till the time of death to renounce. We see in the Bhagavatam in the very beginning, it speaks of Katwanga Maharaj, who at the last moment became fully Krishna conscious. So that's possible. At the last moment we can become fully Krishna conscious, but don't wait for that. Try to become fully Krishna conscious before that. Try to absorb yourself in Krishna before that, so that when that time comes, you'll already be in that state of consciousness. It's much easier. Don't leave everything to the last minute. Our habit in ISKCON is to leave everything to the last minute. Right? Last minute, everyone's running around, you know. Srila Prabhupada said, whenever he would go to a temple, he would always smell fresh paint. You know, when he arrived in St Kilda in Burnett Street, just a few kilometres down there, 1973 I think it was, or 74, Prabhupada walked in and the devotees were still painting as Prabhupada was walking up the Prabhupada got out of the car and they were still painting, and then like as Prabhupada walked in, everyone like, you know, put everything away and everything like that, and then Prabhupada walked in. And then Prabhupada, you know, can smell fresh paint. He said, everywhere I go, I can smell fresh paint. But the devotees, last minute, last minute, last minute, last minute. But did you see Prabhupada like, was Prabhupada like that in his life? Do you read in Prabhupada Lilamrita? Hands up if you've read the Prabhupada Lilamrita. Everyone should read Prabhupada Lilamrita. You have to know Prabhupada inside and out. So many books now about Prabhupada, Harisori Prabhu's diaries, My Glorious Master, Watering the Seed, TKG's diary. There's so many books about Prabhupada. You should read all these. You should know Prabhupada inside of that. He's our founder of Acharya. And you should know Prabhupada intimately. Right? So, you never see in there, you don't read anywhere in the Lila Amrita where Prabhupada, like, last minute's like, quick, Hari Sorry Prabhu, you know, grab everything we have to hear. Prabhupada never like that. Always composed, always regal, right? Always on time, always early. Not just on time, but early. You know, Prabhupada was just so composed and powerful and never seen running anywhere. You know, this kind of always see devotees running across the courtyard and running back, right? Running to the Prajari room. And, no, Prabhupada was never like that. That is not motive goodness. That is motive ignorance, which then rises to the motive passion. But it's not motive goodness. Motive goodness is very composed. And Prabhupada, he was in transcendental goodness, Vishuddha Sattva. One of the Acharyas commenting on the Bhagavatam says, Vishuddha Sattva and Sattva Guna are very similar. So we should at least be in Sattva Guna. Right. We can't be in Shuddha Sattva yet, because we're not pure, but we should at least be in Sattva Guna. We should at least be organized and composed and orderly in what we do. We should at least be like that. And then gradually we can rise to the transcendental platform. Prabhupada says that motor goodness is a springboard to pure goodness. You can get to pure goodness from motor goodness. You can't get back to the spiritual world from the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. Although most of the time we try to get to the spiritual world from passion. Right? Passion means, you know, you stand about 100 miles back and you see the spiritual world and you just run. Just trying to, like, smash into the spiritual world. It doesn't work. You don't get there. Mode of passion is blocked. Everything is blocked. The spiritual world is blocked. You have to get past Kshetrapal. Kshetrapal means Lord Shiva. He's the protector of the holy Dharma. You have to get past him. Right? You can't get past him if you're in the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion. If you have false ego, you can't get past him. When those things are diminished, then he says, okay, go. He'll help you get past. But you can't get past when you're contaminated. So, Parikshit Maharaj realizes he only has 7 days to live. So he uses his time perfectly. He uses his time properly. Now, if we look at this verse, what does he do? He rejects all other practices of self-realization. Right? So he understands Krishna consciousness is the highest principle. This is what the Bhagavad Gita teaches. The highest principle is bhakti yoga. So he rejects everything else. And then what does he do? It says here, he sits down firmly. Upavishat. Sits down firmly. Not always jumping around. Right? If you want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, hands up if you want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Well, that's good. You come to the right place. So if you want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, you have to firmly situate yourself. Upavishat means he sat down firmly, unmovable. Right? If you go to India, well, has anyone been to India? Like that. You go to India, like you go to the Holy Dharma. In 1994, I did Navadvip Mandal Parikram. So we do the Parikram for 9 days. We travel around Navadvip, around the 9 islands of the Navadvip Mandala, of Lord Chaitanya's pastime places. So sometimes you go to Gaudiya Mats, where there have been pujaris who have been serving the same deity for 60 years. Every day for 60 years. Right? We have these examples in ISKCON also. Like if you go to Mayapur, you'll see His Grace Janadivas Prabhu and His Grace Pankajangri Prabhu. They've been serving Radha Madhava for 40 years. Practically every day. Sometimes they go to Vrindavan or something, but practically, right? That's all they do, right? Upavisha. Firmly fixed in one place, one service. Right? Prabhupada said these things. Prabhupada said the GBC means if you become a GBC member, Prabhupada said GBC for life. Prabhupada said, if you become a temple president, he said temple president for life. Right? In other words, what was Prabhupada saying? Stick on your service. Don't be like a monkey. Right? Jumping from every tree, like every 5 minutes. Oh, I don't like this service. Okay, we'll give you this service. Oh, I don't like this service. Okay, we'll give you that service. Oh, I don't like this temple. Okay, we'll move you to that temple. Oh, then what does that mean? Does that mean there's something wrong with the externals, or is there something wrong with your mind? Hands up if you vote for the mind. Yeah, so it means your mind's the problem. That's the problem. If you're every 5 minutes, oh, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, then just sit down and do something. Be practical. No, not yet. Okay. So sit down and do something. Just stay fixed on your service. Right? Actually, my spiritual master said, when he was giving a lecture here in Melbourne many years ago, he said, the most advanced devotees in our community are the devotees who do the same service year after year after year. They're the advanced devotees. Right? Not always changing, not always going off doing this, always going off doing that. No, they just stick on their service. Unless your service is to move around. Yeah, unless your name is Devamrita Swami. Right? Then Maharaja's service is to move around. Right? That's your service, to move around. But the rest of us, we should stick. And we should stick on our service, not changing all the time. Right? And you say, well, that's difficult. Okay. But the fact is that everything is difficult in this material world. Everything. Right? You think it's difficult being a devotee, try and being a non-devotee. That's harder. Huh? I think being a devotee is hard. Being a non-devotee is harder. We read in the Bhagavatam the other day in the seventh canto, Prabhupada said, it's relatively easy to go back to Godhead, but it takes a lot of work to go to hell. Huh? Prabhupada said that. He said, if you want to go to hell, you have to work hard to get there. You don't just get to hell easily. You have to really work. And you look at all the people in this world at the moment. They're working hard to get to hell. They're working hard to make the world hell. But if you want to go back to the spiritual world, right, that's relatively easy. Of course, it's not easy in one sense, but in another sense, it's relatively easy. So, it is being said here that if we want to go back to the spiritual world, we have to become upavishad, which means sit down in one place. Don't move around all over the place. Right? Stay fixed in the service that you've been given by your spiritual master, by Krishna. And just do that service to the best of your ability. You may say, well, it's boring staying in one place all the time. I want to move around. I want to see different things. But the fact is that how does a devotee stay enthused day after day, year after year, decade after decade in his service? How does the devotee stay enthused? Because he's always trying to improve his service. A devotee never thinks, now I've done my service perfectly. If you look at the organizations, if you look at the corporations around the world, right, Peter Burwash, who's a devotee, he says that the best corporations, right, the best businesses, the best industries around the world, if you go and critique them, or if you ask them to give self-critique about themselves, they always give themselves like 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10, all these ones. And he says that when he travels around, because he teaches corporations how to improve themselves, he says the ones that give themselves 8s and 9s, they're not so good. They're actually the 6s and 7s. Right? But the ones who give themselves the 6s and 7s, he said they're actually the 8s and the 9s. They're the ones who have a very high standard. So the same in our devotional service, that if we're always thinking, how can I improve? How can I do better? Right? How can I make my service better for Krishna? If we always look at them, we'll always stay enthused in devotional service. It never becomes stale or stagnant. Prabhupada said, devotional service is not static, it is ecstatic. Right? But you have to have the right attitude. Srila Prabhupada says in the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, he says that devotional service, advancement in Krishna consciousness, is based upon the attitude of the performer. What is our service attitude? And who are the most advanced devotees? Right? The ones who have the best service attitude towards Krishna. You see in the spiritual world, right, which is full of pure devotees, they have the best spirit, they have the best service attitude. Right? And you'll see in the material world which devotees are the most advanced, the ones who have the best service attitude, who are always trying to improve. They never think, oh, today I've done it perfectly. They always think, I could improve, I could do it better for Krishna. That is the attitude. So Maharaj Parikshit, he says, okay, now I don't have long to go, so I'll just sit down at this place, Upavishad, which means I'll just stay firmly fixed. Right? I've got 7 days to live. I'm not going to go and visit the Taj Mahal. Right, it's just down the road there in Delhi. I'm not going to go down to, in Agra. I'm not going to go down and visit, you know, I'm not going to go over to Varanasi. I'm not going to go out to Badrinath. I'm not going to go to Dwarka. Right, I'm not going to go to Puri. I'm not going to go to Sri Rangam. He doesn't think, oh, I need to go to the four dharmas. He just sits down. And where does he sit down? Right, on the bank of the Ganges, Jumuna. Right, so this is significant. Right? He goes to a holy place. We should aspire that the end of our life we spend in a holy place. Right? Because if you pass from this world on the bank of the Ganges, the bank of the Jamuna, you will get unlimited benefit. Or, if you can transport your consciousness, as Rupa Goswami teaches in the Nectar of Instruction, you make your consciousness the bank of the Ganges. You make your consciousness the bank of the Jamuna, which means Mayapur and Vrindavan. Right? Mayapur is the bank of the Ganges. If you absorb your consciousness in Mayapur at the time of death, if you absorb your consciousness in Vrindavan, which is on the bank of the Jamuna, then you will go to the spiritual world. Even if physically you may not be there, in your consciousness you are there, so you will transcend. Or, if you can, you go and you stay on the bank of those holy rivers. Just by touching those holy rivers, then you will become liberated. And then, what was Maharaj Parikshit's attitude in the last 7 days? It says prayam. Right? Prayam means fasting. So what did he do? 7 days to live. Right? He gives up eating and drinking. Right? Can you imagine that? Giving up eating and drinking. Right? Prabhupada, well, it says the four activities of the material world are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Prabhupada said in his final days in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, long ago I gave up mating and defending. And I've been praying to Krishna that I can give up eating and sleeping. And he said, now Krishna is fulfilling my desires. So this is the consciousness of the devotee. At the end of his life, he just rejects the material activities. And it reduces the material activities. And if we're advanced in Krishna consciousness, we'll reduce the material activities now. We'll reject eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. In other words, we'll reduce them to the minimum requirements as much as possible. But you have to be practical also. We're not so advanced at this point that we can completely give up eating and sleeping. As soon as you start trying it, it backfires. Just like Tamal Krishna Maharaj, one time he was on the train with Prabhupada. Prabhupada would only sleep for 2 hours. That was his program. He'd go to bed at 10, get up at 12. That was his program. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Prabhupada were on the train. So it's 10 o'clock, 10:30. So they turned off the lights. They're in a sleeper cabin. So they both took rest. And then 2 hours later, Prabhupada gets up. Because that's Prabhupada's system. He gets up. He wakes up. So he just rested and he got up. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj kind of woke up and he saw Prabhupada there. So he got out of his sleeping bag and he offered obeisances to Prabhupada. And then he sat up and Prabhupada said, take rest. He said, take rest. You need 6 hours. I can do 2 hours, but you are not on that level. You take an extra rest. And same with eating. Especially when we're young, in our 20s, our 30s, like that. Then Srila Prabhupada said, devotees should eat sumptuously. In other words, they should eat properly so they feel strong in Krishna consciousness. You have to keep your senses strong in Krishna consciousness. So you eat so that you can do your service with an undisturbed mind. Just like on the Polish tour, Indradumna Swami, when the devotees are taking breakfast, he personally goes around sometimes and he serves out the devotees, prasadam. And he encourages everyone, eat properly, eat enough, because today there's a big day of service. So make sure you eat properly so you can do your service. When you get older, automatically you're forced to eat less because the body it regulates itself for you. Right? It says to you, okay, that's it. The good days are gone. Now it's time to reduce like that. So that's old age. That will happen automatically. So when you're young, keep yourself fit and healthy in Krishna consciousness. But when you get older, automatically you'll have to reduce your eating and your sleeping. But devotees, we should make steps to do this ourselves. But not so dramatically or too drastically so that we become Falgu Vairagis. Not that it's false renunciation. And then we go from Bhoga to Tyag constantly. Renunciation, Bhoga, enjoyment, renunciation, enjoyment, renunciation, enjoyment. That's what we do the first couple of years of Krishna consciousness. Now I'm not going to eat any sweets. Only once a week. Right? And at the end of the, you know, by Wednesday, then you're taking 12 rasgullas. I remember those days. You know, we're brahmacharis, we're very staunch. We used to say, okay, no sweets, only once a week. And then, you know, some weeks you'd do it, but other weeks you'd get to Wednesday and then you'd have a maha fall down. And then you'd go to the cool room at 9:30 at night, you know, meet one of the other brahmacharis. Oh, you fell down as well? Okay, at least we're in good company. We'll do it together. Fill yourself up with sweets. So, Prabhupada actually said to Umapati Swami in the very late 60s, in the beginning of our movement, Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness means moderation. Right? It means not too much renunciation, not too much sense gratification. But Prabhupada said, the moderate path, or the middle road. In other words, don't be too renounced as a devotee, but don't get too much into sense enjoyment either. Just have a balance somewhere in between. So generally, that means in Kali Yuga, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that means Grihastha Ashram. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in Kali Yuga, Grihastha Ashram is a good ashram for Vaishnavas. Generally, not everyone. Some devotees can avoid it, those who are pure in heart. But generally, most of us, we go on that moderate path. Right, not too renounced. We should be renounced, but not too renounced. And not too much in the sense gratification. You can have some sense gratification, but it must be regulated. And if you do that, then you can progress very quickly. That is the power of the Sankirtan movement. We can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. It is so powerful. This process is so powerful. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said it's like an arrow. You know, when Arjuna used to shoot his arrows from Gandiva, he had a bow called Gandiva. When he used to shoot the arrow would go for 1 mile straight before it would even begin to drop. Right. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says bhakti is like an arrow. Right? When you fire the arrow, it just penetrates and just keeps going and keeps going. So devotional service is extremely powerful. Right? Even if it's imperfectly performed, even if it's not ananya bhakti, not continuously performed, ahoituki apratihata, right? Even if it's not perfect, it is so powerful, it can penetrate the coverings of the material world, it can take us back to the spiritual world in this lifetime, if we're serious about it. So Maharaj Parikshit, he just sits down in one place, he gives up the material activities, right? He chooses a holy place, and then holy people come to be with him. You'll see that when you pass away, holy people will come to be with you. This is the system. When we pass away, holy people will come. If we've dedicated our life to serving Krishna, holy people will come and they will look after us. And they will guide our consciousness back to Krishna in the final moments, in the final days. And that is the perfection of life. And that's why this part of the Bhagavatam is so important. Because this is the whole Bhagavatam. It's just a conversation between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. And Shukadeva Goswami shows us perfection in perfection in chanting, and Parikshit Maharaj shows his perfection in hearing. And they both attain perfection. Actually, they're both already perfect, but they're just showing us an example. So we'll stop here. I'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we have discussed.
Could you clarify how sometimes running around Krishna's service can be a passion? Like, for example, when Prabhupada Chaitanya Charitamrita Maharaj, so devotees were running around to accomplish that task in 2 months. Or for example, we are Rath Yatra, or we are doing the retreat, so there will be some running around. Sometimes we have to push devotees to get things done. So how many practical how that we know the passion?
In the Bhagavatam, in the second canto, then Brahma, Lord Brahma has to create the material world. And he prays at that time because he begins creation. Creation means passion, maintenance means goodness, and destruction means ignorance. They're the prominent modes in those three activities. So he's actually the guna avatar for the mode of passion, is Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma, when he begins creation, which is a passionate activity, he prays to Krishna that even though I'm beginning creation now, which means I have to employ the mode of passion, means I have to use the mode of passion in order to get this universe created, he prays to the Lord, please do not let me become overcome by this mode. So there's like a subtle difference or a fine line. You can be employing the mode, but not be affected by the mode. Right, because one of Lord Shiva's names, because Lord Shiva is also very involved in the material creation, the maintenance, creation, the maintenance and destruction of this material world, Lord Shiva is very much involved with all of that. So one of Lord Shiva's names is Tamasi. Tamasi means one who is in contact with darkness, or the mode of ignorance, or the material energy. That's the difference between Vishnu and Shiva. Shiva touches it, Vishnu never touches it. Right? But it's explained that although Shiva touches it, he never becomes overcome by it or affected by it. Lord Shiva is never affected by the mode of ignorance. Lord Brahma prays to not become affected by the mode of passion. So sometimes to get something happening, okay, we have to get passionate in the sense we have to get active. Passion means activity. We have to become active. We have to become absorbed. We have to throw energy into it. But we have to be very careful not letting our consciousness become overwhelmed by the negative qualities of that mode, which means unlimited desires, material desires, which is what the mode of passion is very much about. So you have to be careful, you see. Generally, devotees have to live in sattva-guna, generally. Because I know for myself, when I get too much in the mode of passion, in other words, when I have to work too much, and I'm working too much, even as a devotee, but I'm just doing too much, you know, work, then I get tired. And as soon as you get tired, mode of passion, it begins to degenerate into mode of ignorance. And then you start sleeping more, material desires come out more, sex desire especially, overcomes your consciousness. So then you're going in the opposite direction. So we have to be very careful about employing. So Prabhupada says that Lord Brahma employed the mode. In other words, he was in control, not the mode overcame him. So, does that... just one. Does that answer your question? Do you want to say anything else?
Thinking activity is always in the mode of passion, because it describes how those in the mode of goodness is always very determined in their action. And so, you know, mode of passion means activities that are motivated by material desires. That's a symptom of mode of passion. Whereas activities in the mode of goodness, like, you know, serving Srila Prabhupada by printing books and so forth, the motivation was to please Prabhupada and ultimately to please Krishna. And so, therefore, you know, we can't necessarily put that activity fairly and squarely in the mode of activity as in the mode of passion. Because we have to look at the motivation for which it's being done, and that's a very important element, because a person who's in the mode of goodness is very determined in their actions. See, Prabhupada was very active, you know, travelled all around the world, he pushed his disciples to produce results, he built, you know, 108 temples, he was very active. But we can't say that Prabhupada's activities were in the mode of passion, because his mode of service was to please Krishna. So when the motivation is to serve, then the activity can still be in the mode of goodness, because, or beyond the mode of goodness, beyond the mode of passion, beyond the mode of goodness, because ultimately it's there to serve Krishna.
Hmm. Do you need any more clarification? Or anything more you want to say?
No, I think what Prabhu's saying and what you said makes sense. The motivation is quite important.
Yes, so Krishna says in the 14th chapter of the Gita, he says that the bhakti is not to do with the three modes of material nature. Because bhakti is about serving Krishna, so that's transcendental. However, Lord Kapila says in the third canto that bhakti can be performed under the influence of those three modes. So even though bhakti itself is pure, our motivation is pure, but we have to be careful how we behave or act while we're performing our devotional service. Because the motivation is pure, it's to serve Guru, it's to serve Krishna, it's to please them, but sometimes we become overwhelmed by the lower modes. Because Kapila speaks about this, he says, okay, this is bhakti, but it's bhakti overwhelmed by passion, bhakti overwhelmed by ignorance, and bhakti in goodness, that's of a higher quality. And he recommends that because that leads to pure goodness. Well, that's all.
And Prabhupada has also already established a Vaishnava system. Now, in a mature state, consciousness may be more difficult to know passion or ignorance of goodness. So, we're establishing a Vaishnava system with the theme that all activities actually have. Adopt consciousness. So as a chapter we're fighting by the passion, but because we're doing it for Krishna, the activity is purified and elevates one to a higher Krishna consciousness level. So as long as our activity is always God-centered, then there's no scope for force from that mode into a lower mode that actually allows itself to start the rhythm.
Good.
Probably the translation reads the Ganges River, but in the purport to the Prabhupada is writing Yamuna. So,
it's in tomorrow's verse.
There's clarification about it. They do meet the two rivers. Yeah, the Ganges does meet. They do meet, and they do flow. It describes when they get to Mayapur. It's the Jamuna flowing on one side, and the Ganges flowing on the other side. So they meet together, and then they flow together like that. So possibly up at Delhi, they've already met, and they're flowing simultaneously. Any other points?
I have a question about the this is the first canto. It's described as creation. Right. So I'm just wondering, but there's not a lot about creation. There's more about creation in some of the later cantos.
Mm.
So I'm just wondering why Janman Yasya Yataha, there's references to right at the beginning, there's references to the Krishna being the source of it, Saka. So what is it called, creation?
It's either Jiva Goswami or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. One of them says that all 10 subject matters are in each of the cantos. So they're all in every canto. I don't know if that labelling each canto saga, visaga, like that, up to Australia. I don't know if Prabhupada did that. I don't know if that's actually, like, there. If you get the original Bhagavatam, I don't know if it says that. Like, first canto, saga, second canto, visaga.
In the canto descriptions, like, you'll see it says creation.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's Prabhupada doing that.
No, it is. It's
no, I'm saying, yeah, Prabhupada, but I don't know if it was prior to Prabhupada. Prabhupada's named, I'm not sure if it was done previous to that or not.
I think it is, because it's described, isn't it described by Rupa Goswami as well and others? In the 10th canto, I think Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, Purujan Prabhu would know. I mean, I know that the Acharyas mention all subject matters are in each canto. So, as you said, then Saga, it's definitely explained more in Canto 2 and 3 than it is in Canto 1.
Yeah.
I actually asked this question to Tamal Krishna Maharaj in France in 1996.
Yeah.
They questioned him. And then he just mentioned a whole lot of references in the first canto where it is there, but like in a seed form. Like that, it's mentioned continuously. So, yeah, third chapter mentions about the Purusha avatars and like that. So, I mean, seed form, it's there in the first canto, and then it expands that. So.
Well, there is a mention of all of the avatars, and the Purusha avatars are mentioned. Fifth chapter, isn't it?
Third chapter. Yeah, because. You see, Canto 7 is called Ishanukata, right? Like conversations about God, topics like that. But the Acharyas have pointed out that doesn't mean that this canto is only about that, because every canto has all 10 subject matters in it, so it's not like that. But, you know, for some reason, it's called, like, you know, each one is systematically given like that. There's 12 cantos, there's only 10 subject matters also, so. I think so. 9 is called Mukti, 10 is called Ashrana. So maybe it's just like a way of looking at it. Like that. But it's not that, it doesn't mean that the first canon is only about Saga and that's all it's about and like that. But someone else had a question?
I had a question earlier. This is regarding action. And if you don't act, you might regret it. If you've got an idea and you don't do anything about it. But sometimes if the actions are repeated, you know it's not healthy, but you still go ahead and do the action, then the responsibility falls on Krishna or yourself.
No, it falls. Yeah, but it falls on you. We have responsibility.
Yeah.
Krishna gave us independence.
Yeah.
So it means you can't do something and say, "Oh, Krishna made me do that." Like, I come up and punch you in the nose, and I say, "Oh, Krishna made me do that," then that's incorrect.
Yeah.
So it means you have to learn to use your independence in Krishna's service. That's the point.
Yeah. So sometimes Krishna might help us in ways that we can't understand.
Krishna's always helping us, yeah. Krishna's involved, for a devotee, Krishna's involved in every single second of our life, like that. But we also have to have responsibility. You can't just blame everything on Krishna constantly. So. Just wait, I haven't heard a question.
Just briefly, who made the division of Bhagavad Gita into chapters? How was that made? Was it originally a conversation?
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, Krishna, as he got through each canto, each chapter, I don't think he said, okay, now this one's about Jnana Yoga, this one's about Karma Yoga, like that. I don't think he did that. But Vyasadeva wrote it. He was the one who wrote it down. So I imagine that Vyasadeva has written the title of each chapter. Because, you know, one chapter is called Purushottam Yoga, one's called Jnana Yoga, one's called Jnana Yoga, one's called Karma Yoga. So I'd imagine that would be Vyasadeva who was done that.
I think I heard one time someone say that was one of the Acharyas chapter titles.
Who did that?
Yeah.
There could be, yeah. I'm not sure who did it. You have to ask Banaswami or Burujan Prabhu or someone who did that. So. Any other question? Comment?
At the time of death, you can move your consciousness to the Ganges. But don't you run the risk of being born there?
Yeah, but if you're born next to the Ganges, that's an exalted position. It doesn't mean the Ganges in this world, because the Ganges also flows in the spiritual world. So ultimately it means, you know, an advanced devotee sees the Ganges in this world and the Ganges in the spiritual world as non-different. So when it says that you should have your consciousness in the Ganges, it means seeing them in Krishna's pastimes. Because when Krishna comes to this world, Lord Chaitanya or Krishna come to this world, they perform their pastimes on the bank of the Ganges or the bank of the Jamuna. And that's why those rivers are sacred. So at the time of death, we should be meditating on those places, but in relation to Krishna, which is transcendental. Not that we want to come back, you know, I want to live in you know, Calcutta. Yeah, you pray the opposite to Krishna. Time of death, you say, please don't let me take birth in Calcutta.
Excuse my ignorance, but does the Ganges as a river, just not that it flows in both, does it have significance being water? Or?
It's originally it says the Ganga. If you read in the 8th canto or the Bhagavad Gita, it says that when Vamanadeva, one form of Krishna, an incarnation of Krishna, he lifted his foot when he was in this world, and his toe went through the covering of the universe, and there's a spiritual body of water which separates the material world and the spiritual world. It's the causal ocean of the river Viraja. So when he put his toe through the covering of the universe, a drop of that water flowed into this universe, and that's what it is. It's spiritual water. It's physically spiritual water. It's not ordinary. And you can see that when you bathe in it. It's spiritual. It has a very powerful spiritual energy about it. And it was so powerful when it entered into the universe, it was entering with such force that Shiva, Lord Shiva, had to go under it and catch it on top of his head so it didn't smash the planets and the universe as it entered. And then he allowed it to gradually flow out, and that's what we see. And then it flows through every planetary system in the universe. So when it's flowing in the heavenly planets, it's called Mandakini. Right? And then gradually comes down, enters Earth, comes through the Himalayas, and then it goes down, and then it goes into the oceans, and travels around the Earth, right, through the different oceans, and then it goes down into the lower regions of the universe. So it flows from the top to the bottom of the universe. Okay. Any other question? Comment?
You know, because it's flying from the lotus feet of Krishna, therefore it's a deep meditation that the devotee encourages to meditate on Krishna's lotus feet. So meditating on the river that comes from that's washed his feet is auspicious and enlightening for the devotees.
Any other questions? Okay. Srila Prabhupada, keep